Welcome to the X-Men Task Podcast. I'm Sonia.
And I'm Willie. Today's episode is Days of Future Past Part 2.
Right, a continuation from Part 1 that we watched and talked about last week. And, you know, it's really amazing that each of these episodes is only 20 minutes long because they really pack in lots and lots of action to each and every one.
I know. And then when you combine it with last week's episode, it's, you know, it's like 42 minutes or 44 minutes long. And that's like a nice chunk of X-Men action.
Right. So in the last episode, we met Bishop, who time traveled back to the past to try to prevent an assassination from happening in Washington, D.C.
Right. From a dystopian future where it's all in ruins and everyone's dead.
Right.
More or less.
So he's back in the past and meets the X-Men, of course.
Jacks an MTA bus and cracks mansion.
Right.
And then Professor X uses Cerebro to read his mind, and he, you know, believes that he's telling the truth. And then they fight Nimrod, the horrible murdering Sentinel robot from the future, which is further proof that Bishop is telling the truth. And then the episode ends on a cliffhanger where Gambit emerges in the room, and Bishop remembers that Gambit is the assassin and tries to kill him.
Right. I mean, if you want a fuller explanation, go back and listen to the previous episode.
Go back and listen and watch the episode, too.
But anyway.
So this episode opens in a fun way. It's like it takes place like 5 minutes before that last episode ends. We see Rogue and Gambit driving along in Rogue's famous, now famous, red convertible. Gambit continues to hit on Rogue. She says something like, "Don't you ever get tired of yourself?" And he says, "Not when I'm talking about you, Cher." And, like, winks at the camera. It's I really love that line. And then Rogue is really frustrated. She flies away. And Gambit, in another great quip, says, "Don't worry, Rogue. I parked the car." And this episode is, like, swings hard and connects with all the quips. There's, like, a million great classic quotes in this episode, and I'll highlight a few as we go run through the plot here.
Okay.
But, I mean, I just love this episode for the one-liners, and it's just amazing voice acting and writing on the part of the production team here.
Yeah, definitely.
So anyway, you know, then we're quickly back where the last episode ends. Bishop sees Gambit, he aims his gun and fires, and interestingly, Rogue does not hesitate. She takes a shot for Gambit. So we had a lot of discussion about how like much Rogue might be frustrated at Gambit for constantly sexually harassing her, but they clearly have a bond of some kind.
Yeah, in the end, she's got his back, and she like takes a laser blast for him.
Right, and, but it doesn't matter because she takes a laser blast, and then Bishop manages to shoot Gamba in the chest anyway, but he's fine. I guess he still hasn't set his gun to stun. I'm out of stun.
Right.
So, you know, there's a lot of chaos, they're fighting, and people settle down for a minute, and that's where Bishop tells the full story of what happened. Because in the previous episode, he had time-traveling amnesia and could only remember bits and pieces. But now he remembers everything, almost.
Yeah, I guess his memory is, like, pretty much restored.
Almost, because he still doesn't remember who the target is of the assassination. Like, that's the last detail he can't figure out. He says he doesn't know. I'm not sure if he says he doesn't know or doesn't remember, but I think he says, "I don't know," and which is kind of, like, crazy. Like, maybe he just, like, wasn't educated as to who was assassinated.
It's like, but in the future, it's such a big, like, famous event that I thought that it was just the amnesia sort of.
Yeah, it's probably the amnesia. But anyway, we see more of a fuller picture of the of what happens after the assassination. And, you know, it's more or less what we saw in the last episode, but in greater detail. Like, this time we see we see Cyclops fight the Sentinels, and he's joined by Havoc, his brother, which is a cool cameo. And Havoc is presented in his, like, glorious, like, early 90s X-Factor gear. And for those who don't know, Havoc, like I just mentioned, is the brother of Cyclops. He also has mutant powers. We'll see. This is not the last we'll see of Havoc. He will appear later down the road in a more extended cameo. And their backstory will be fleshed out as well. And then we see some more mutants. We see Sunfire, who we met previously in the Slave Island episode. We see the Morlocks again. They get cornered by Sentinels, so it looks like the Morlocks get killed. And then we see the mutants all get captured, and this time we see old Cyclops, Jean Grey, and old Beast. Like,
we've seen them before, though. That was the same clip that they showed in the last episode,
I don't think.
I think it was. Okay. Well, whatever.
Well, whatever. But it's just funny to see old Cyclops. Like, he's got the Reed Richards, like, white hair wings above his ears.
Yeah, they make him, like, a little wrinkly, so you know that it's the future.
Yeah, and Beast, really quickly, too, you see Beast with some white hair, which is kind of funny for a blue man. and then, you know, Bishop, which we hinted at in the last episode, Bishop explains that the Sentinels also turn on the humans, so that the whole world is just controlled by maniacal robots. It's kind of, like, scary and terrible and dark.
Mm-hmm.
You know, kind of like, I guess, sort of like The Matrix, but with less altered reality, in, like, you know what I mean? There's no virtual reality for the humans. Everybody just lives in a concentration camp or dies.
Awful.
Yeah. And so that's, you know, that's sort of like, now we've got the full story crystallized. Bishop's his time-traveling amnesia is more or less cured, except for he doesn't know who the target of the assassination is, and the X-Men have to figure out what they're going to do.
Right. And he, like, makes it a point to explain a few different times, which I think is weird, like, that the way that he's able to stay in the past is with that, like, time travel bracelet that he's got on.
Yeah.
And he, like, really spells it out, like, a couple of different times.
He's like, if you want to get rid of me, it's like, if everyone ever wanted me out of their sight, just get rid of my time traveling armband. Yep. That's all you'd have to do.
Just blast my bracelet.
I don't know why you would do it, but in case everyone's wondering again.
Right.
And
but anyway, he, like, so he gets to the end of his story, and
they're trying to figure out who the target could be, and of course Storm says something reasonable. She says, oh, it's probably the president. And Professor X, like, immediately thinks it's himself. He's like, it could be me. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? And then Professor X lists his resume for the X-Men. He's like, I am, like, the foremost, speaker on human and mutant rights. Right. I am well known in the world. He, like, kind of almost brags about himself a little bit. He has, like, a real self-serious moment where he thinks he could be the target. But it's not Professor X. Spoilers. That's just a little bit moment of, like, false vanity there. Although not really. I mean,
well, it's like, it's just an opportunity for some character exposition.
Yeah, they're just explaining. Yeah, they're explaining that Professor X is kind of famous and well known and important.
Right.
But
basically, like, Gambit doesn't believe the story, and he's like, "What do we really know about this guy?" And that really triggers something for the rest of the X-Men because
Wolverine, like, has a great comeback to that. Only a little more than we know about you.
Right.
You've never been straight with us, not completely.
And
which is kind of like the pot calling the kettle black, because, like, Wolverine also has a dark
really,
and mysterious,
like, shroud
past.
Shroud themselves in mystery.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
And I mean, like we said, the quips are outrageous. That was another example of a great line from this episode. And Wolverine is really quick to turn on Gambit. Up to this point, he's really kind of disliked Gambit throughout the show. They're always getting into fights. They're always on the verge of killing each other.
Mm-hmm.
And this is just like the perfect excuse for Wolverine. He's like, there can only be one mysterious mutant with a dark past and a cool attitude on this team.
Yeah.
Ever since you came along,
he's really, like, keyed up to like past 10 all the time.
Yeah. And then there's another interesting characterization moment where Storm announces to the room, I know Gambit better than anybody. And
she gives, like, a sideways glance to Rogue.
And,
like,
Rogue kind of acknowledges, like, yeah, you know more than I do.
Right. Which, to, like, an adult audience is, like, are they involved with each other?
Well,
or, like, what's going on
this
with Storm and Gambit?
Right. So, and if you were an industrious little want-to-be know-it-all kid like I was, you'd go to the comics and you'd find out that Storm and Gambit's origins are sort of tied together in a weird way.
Yeah.
I don't remember the full story right now, but it's something to do when Storm was, like, a young girl in Africa and she knew Gambit as a thief, or I don't know. I mean, they had some kind of connection.
Yeah.
There was, like, the adventures of Storm and Gambit at one point. So,
anyway, yeah.
That's interesting.
That's
like
a
more
quick nod to that.
More
past,
layering. It's like, that's why the show's so great, because it can layer in references from the comics in a subtle way without really holding your hand. They give these nods and winks, and it gives the show this, like, extra depth that you wouldn't expect. And I think that's, like, a big, like, key to the Marvel Universe's success on the whole. I mean, it's obviously done in the comics, but it's something the movies do as well, and not just the X-Men movies.
Yeah.
They always, like, all the Marvel movies give these, like, little nods to the fans of like, mentioning, like a character's backstory or just, like, an event that might have happened to them. And, like, you know, all the Marvel fanboys and girls in the audience, like, giggle a little bit because, like, oh, I know what they're talking about. They're talking about, you know, the Infinity Stones or whatever it might be.
And if you don't know those references, then it's, like, not a big deal.
You usually have a dorky friend next to you that, like, can't wait to explain it to you.
Yeah, but I'm saying it's, like, it's also enjoyable without that extra level.
Yeah, oh, yeah,
you know?
Definitely.
If you don't know it, like, it just passes you by and it's not a big deal.
I even think if you don't know it, like, you can often, I mean, if there's a beat where there's an unexplained revelation or hint at something, you kind of sense that there's a greater thing at play anyway. They're really good at telegraphing them. Hmm. You know, I think that's how kids picked up on this show in the past. They sense that there's things going on in the comics that weren't in the show. Like, you know, like, kids were able to detect that, which is, I think, is, like, great writing.
Well, it's just, you know, Marvel is really good at building up, like, a detailed, like, rich universe.
Mm, yeah,
so,
it's amazing.
Yeah, that's
like... Their mythology is insane.
Yeah.
And then, you know, the quips, like, do not stop. So, right away, Gambit just decides to go to the hangar and get in a plane and fly to Washington, and he's really honest about it. They're like, where are you going? He's like, I'm going to Washington. And Bishop's like, he admits it. He's like, no, I'm going to stop the assassination. And obviously the X-Men collectively vetoed this plan.
Right.
And Wolverine has a great line. He's saying, and I'm staying behind to babysit.
Right, which just seems like the worst idea. Like,
because Bishop's staying behind too.
Like, yeah. Bishop and Gambit are being like... basically sequestered at the X mansion by the rest of the X-Men.
Seems like a good plan.
Which does seem like a good plan, but, like, Wolverine, of all people, like, we've really gone into his personality and how he's, like, a real firecracker. Like, he seems like the worst choice to be the one to, like, mediate the tension between
these
two.
Yeah, that's a good point, but he probably, I bet he volunteers himself because he thinks he's the, like, more powerful than the two of them put together. He really overrates his own, like, strength in a way.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Bishop's, like, a huge, burly, powerful mutant. And Gambit's a super agile, like, you know, thief ninja.
Yeah.
With amazing powers. And Wolverine's like, I could take the both of them. He's like, you wimps, go to Washington.
I mean, we don't see that
happen. I'm gonna stay, like, with this testosterone.
But maybe, yeah.
Yeah, I think that's, like, his thinking there.
To me, like, it seemed like it would make more sense if, you know, like, Jean Grey or Storm or, like...
Right, because they...
Anybody more reasonable and, like, level-headed.
Well, maybe Jean... I mean, Jean might be the best choice because if things get out of control, she could, like, theoretically... like, mind control them to stay put or, you know, lock the door with her mind power. I don't know.
Well, anyway, that's not what happens.
I mean, locked doors don't stop these mutants. But anyway, so then there's a hilarious scene where the three of them are hanging out playing cards. Of course, they're playing cards, you know, with Gambit around. And Bishop's like, I should have known better to play cards with an assassin. Like, that doesn't make any sense. Yeah. Like, why would... And then, but then Wolverine has a great line where he's trying to, you know, like you said, diffuse the tension. He's like, cards won't be the only thing that gets cut around here. And it's another excuse for him to pop his claws.
Yeah, of course.
And that does nothing to diffuse the tension. And then, I mean, you know, this episode is really great. Like, the action kind of shifts to Washington. The X-Men are there. They're going to attend Professor X's... testimony on Capitol Hill to Senator Kelly, and so, you know, it's kind of like a real, like, it's like an excuse for Senator Kelly to, like, grandstand about his with his anti-mutant, like, agenda, and just yell in the professor's face. He accuses the professor of running a clearinghouse for pro-mutant propaganda. So, and Professor's, like, trying to reasonably explain himself, but he gets cut off.
Right.
And then, like, the other X-Men are on guard. Like, Storm and Rogue are flying around the Capitol, like, keeping an eye out. And there's, like, a funny, like, moment, which I just think is hilarious, where Jubilee is sleeping underneath a tree in the Washington Mall. And she's having a nightmare. And the nightmare is very specifically reminding the audience what the plot of this episode is.
Yeah.
It's almost as if she's dreaming right after a commercial break and little kids need to be reminded, like, what's going on.
Yeah, right.
She's like, Gambit, you're an assassin. Stop. Don't do it.
You know, something like that, yeah.
Yeah. And then another, like, moment I want to mention Storm is patrolling, like, there's a shot of her, like, sitting on top of the Washington Monument. And it's like, wouldn't somebody notice that? And it's like, where are the DC police?
And yeah, the police are notably absent throughout this episode.
Yeah, it's like, I think people would notice, like, a woman sitting on top of the Washington Monument, even if, like, you know, they wouldn't maybe assume she's a mutant, but maybe someone who's, like, trying to, like, kill herself or some lunatic who... and she's wearing a bright silvery suit. I mean, that just, you know, like you said, the
police... No, that's just, like, you know, the animators, tropes, like, drawing in all the different monuments that you would see in Washington.
I know, but
so it's like, recognizable. Like, oh, yeah, they're in Washington.
I know, but you're right. But, like, from my point of view, it's just really funny to, like, imagine this is real and, like, where, like... You know, like I said, we're the police.
Yeah.
This could not happen. And anyway, so as Professor X is giving his sort of failing speech to Senator Kelly, that's when Mystique's team breaks into this hearing, blows down the walls, and they kidnap the senator.
Mm-hmm.
Or they try to. They cause a ruckus, and so Mystique's team is Pyro, Avalanche, and the Blob, all of whom we've met in previous episodes, though not at the same time. We met Pyro and Avalanche in the Muir Island episodes, and there's an interesting, like, throwaway line by Mystique saying that, like, if you fail in this mission, you'll be eliminated.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, wow, they really, Pyro, Avalanche, and Blob really gotta watch their necks.
High stakes, yeah.
Yeah. So, but they really go about it with such a dopey, like, air that they don't seem like there's any danger. They're really, they're probably just really overconfident in themselves. And, you know, this episode is so fast paced. It's just, it's so much action going on. And then we cut back to the X-Mansion. Gambit, launches a daring escape where he uses his cards in a real subtle way to blow up the computers.
He, like, lays traps, like, glowing cards all over the place, and, like, they explode.
And he escapes. He hijacks one of these yellow, like, one-man personal jets the X-Men have.
Yeah, we haven't seen them yet, I don't think.
Not too much. And they become regular features of the show, that the X-Men all have these little personalized jets that fly themselves. Like, Gambit just punches in Washington, D.C., and just flies in there.
Yeah.
And again... Another thing where, like, where's the D.C. police? Where's the National Guard? Where's the military?
Or just any, like, people that would be around.
And, yeah, because, like, Gambit just lands his jet, like, right next to the Capitol building. I mean, in real life, that would be... They would scramble jets. Like, the army would scramble jets and blow him out of the sky. It's like you cannot, like, land, like, an aircraft like that, like, on the lawn of the Capitol.
Yeah, well, yeah. Pre-9/11 world, it was different.
Right, you're right. Pre-9/11 world, yeah, maybe. So, yeah, right. So the action is, like, really, like, crazy. Mystique's team takes on the X-Men. They spill out into this fight on the Washington Mall. And again, where are the police? Like, because Blob, Pyro, Avalanche, Cyclops, Jean, Storm, and Rogue are all fighting each other in a tense fight. Like, Pyro shooting his flame birds at Storm and Rogue. And Blob is, you know, throwing people into the pool at the Washington Mall by the monument.
Yeah.
You know, and Avalanche is causing little earthquakes everywhere.
Right.
So, and then, you know, this is our second introduction to the Blob. We saw him on Slave Island, and he's got a little more character to him here. Like, in Slave Island, he doesn't really explain himself or his powers, but this time we see him, and, you know, Rogue tries to punch him in the stomach, and her fist gets, like, stuck in his fat.
Yeah.
It's really
gross. He's got, like, some actual, like, dialogue lines here where, you know, it's just, like, his
personality hurts
is,
the,
like,
Blob.
Real dopey, but still, like, you kind of see.
He's at the same mental level as Avalanche. They both have the same dopey accent.
Yeah.
And you know, there's one, like, sort of inconsistency with his power. At one point, Wolverine tackles him, because Wolverine chases Gambit to the Capitol with Bishop, and Blob loses his balance and falls into the water. Like, I think in the comics, Blob can't be moved. Like, he can plant his feet in the ground, and no force on Earth can move him. He can create, like, gravity around his feet or something.
Uh-huh.
And so in this show, he actually stumbles around quite a bit.
But it's not that Wolverine is trying to push him over. It's that Wolverine, like, jumps up on his back and he's surprised. Like, grabs around his neck and is like covering his eyes.
Right, right, right.
So I don't think it's quite the same. I don't think that's an inconsistency.
Yeah, maybe you're right. Okay, but maybe it was still nice to point out like that's what his power is in the comics, which is always kind of fascinating. It's not that it's not just that he's super fat. It's that he's got like
extra gravity
power.
Yeah.
And then Bishop is also fighting these mutants now because he's come with Wolverine, and he blows up like a large chunk of what like might be the Capitol building or one of the other government buildings with his gun. And there's a nice rescue moment where this huge like steeple clock tower is about to fall on this little girl. Rogue catches it with her arms.
Well, first Jean suspends it in the air with her mind power, and then she says it's too heavy, so Rogue has to catch it.
Right.
And Wolverine, rescues the girl. Runs under there to save the girl. Yeah.
Yeah, and then the thing collapses on Rogue, but she heroically blasts through the rubble.
Within, like, a second. Yeah,
she's super
cool
strong.
Moment.
Yeah, and then the kid's crying, and another great quip, "This kid's crying, do something," and just pushes her into Jubilee's arms. But again, the X-Men, like, now, like, a piece of the Capitol is, like, blown up, so where are the police? I mean, there's, like, no police action whatsoever.
Well, there's no people around. Everyone's, like, scattered because they're, like, scared of what's going on, and rightfully so.
So, I mean, it's at this moment that everyone breaks off and the more chaos, like, envelops. And just another great Rogue line where someone asks her, "Where's Bishop?" And she says, "Looks like he's running for Congress." It's so stupid.
Well, no, it's because she sees him from above, like, running into the Congress.
I know,
building,
but
it's not unprompted.
I know, but it's just funny. It's such a funny line.
Yeah.
And then here it's like the full plan is revealed. Gambit was not the assassin. It was Mystique in her Gambit disguise.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a plan cooked up by Apocalypse. The Apocalypse knows that if we kill Senator Kelly, who is the target, by the way, that the world will fall into ruins. So that's why Mystique is kidnapping the senator. But because a Bishop's intervention, and the X-Men know of this plan, and Gambit confronts Mystique as Gambit, and there's a Gambit-on-Gambit fight, which is kind of fun. And Bishop bursts in and decides to kill both of them because he can't tell who's who, just to be safe. And it's at this point the music really flies into drama mode, and Rogue comes in, and she's had enough of Bishop, and she makes a command decision.
Yeah, it's really crazy, actually. Yeah. She, like, grabs his bracelet and off the time travel bracelet off of him and, like, crushes it. So he gets, like, sent instantly back to the past.
To the future.
I mean, to the future. And so does his bracelet, and, like, that's it, done.
Yeah, she's like, "I had enough, Bishop. Like, the assassination's been stopped. You do not need to exist anymore." It's almost like Mystique's the only one concerned about, like, the space-time continuum in a way. She doesn't want to hang out Bishop to hang out longer than he should.
Mystique?
No, I mean, not Mystique. I mean, Rogue's the only one concerned about the space-time continuum.
Right. She took all those cues that he was
Something is wrong with the universe. We need to get Bishop out of this timeline.
But it does seem like she's very... That's a very commanding position to be in, you know?
Yeah,
it's, like, surprising she doesn't consult Professor X.
I know,
like, anybody.
Yeah.
She's real self-possessed.
Yeah, it's hilarious. And it's at this moment that, because of the fight with Mystique and Bishop, Gambit is passed out. So Mystique reveals to Rogue that she was once her, quote, mama.
Right, so she transforms herself into this blonde-haired woman.
Right, southern woman. And, you know... And she reveals the backstory there, which is that, like, when you had nowhere else to go, I took you in, and we were together. And Rogue's like, "Why do you try to turn me into a slave of Apocalypse?" She's like, "It was the only way we could be together again."
Right.
It's really stupid. And she also reveals an interesting character note about herself, Mystique. She says that Apocalypse gave her life meaning, as Professor X did with Rogue.
Right.
Which is, you know, kind of...
You could see that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But, like, on the level...
But it's also surprising that when Rogue worked with Mystique, that Mystique didn't reveal her shape-shifting powers.
Ever.
Yeah.
Right. That this is the first time that we're hearing about this backstory. Because they've had, like, quite a lot of interactions.
Yes, they have.
Like, even in the show. Forget about before.
Right.
Like, the timeline of the show.
Yeah.
But, like, from Rogue's perspective, like, how do you trust that Mystique is telling the truth, right? Because, like, Mystique can transform into anybody and look like anyone, so all she would really need is to have seen, like, a photograph of Rogue's mom and
well,
then be
it's
able
not,
to, like,
right,
transform into that shape and, like, pretend to be her, her
yeah, but,
mom,
but
you know?
It's not her mom, it's... You know, it's a woman who adopted Rogue when
right,
she was a teen runaway.
Mom. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But still,
I guess,
you
but
know
I mean,
saying?
Yeah, but Rogue's
like Rogue believes it, and she gets very like wide eyed and yeah. like, oh my gosh, you know. But like,
mm-hmm.
as
right.
I was
Mystique,
watching
Mystique
it, I was
could
like,
be
oh
like,
man, the level of trust. Like,
yeah. yeah, but I think in this case, it's fairly safe to assume that Mystique. It would be too random for Mystique to know that detail.
Yeah. Okay.
You know, it's. And they're setting up Rogue's backstory too,
yeah.
which comes to play in a huge episode coming down the line.
Right.
And so Bishop flies back into the future, and unfortunately, the future is still wasted. It's not good. And Forge appears, and he's like, "Well, I guess your mission failed, even though you stopped the assassination. We're going to try again and again and again. Once I fix the time machine,
right?
And
until we get it right.
It's like, how does Forge if the past has been changed, how does Forge know anything that's happened? You know, he wouldn't know about the assassination. He wouldn't know about the mission that sent Bishop back in the first place.
Right.
So that's a huge, huge inconsistency right there.
Well, again, like it seems like the X-Men aren't really concerned too much about, like, butterfly effect and,
right,
like,
yeah, and paradoxes and things
right.
of that
well,
nature.
Well, actually, the butterfly effect they are concerned with.
Right.
That's exactly what
yeah,
they're
concerned
here,
with the butterfly
like,
effect. They're not concerned about paradoxes, and they're not concerned about, like, alternate timelines that change people's memories.
Right.
So, I mean, it's just funny, because this actually happens a couple of more times with Bishop going in the past and Forge and him having conversations about whether or not the future was changed.
Right, yeah.
And then we see a really, like, there's a really dark and ominous detail in the background that Wolverine's skeleton is in a, like, a jar.
Yeah.
And,
suspended in a big glass.
Yeah, so Wolverine's dead.
Container, but
he
you
died.
See, like, the claws, so you know it's him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, anyway, back to the present. They go in to check on Senator Kelly, but he is again kidnapped, this time by Magneto. How do we know it's Magneto? Because Professor X's watch stopped, and he drops it in the air, and it sticks to his hovering chair. And he says in a very mysterious tone, "Because it's been magnetized."
Right, and then we see the "to be continued"
right.
scroll at the bottom. So we know that, like, next time we're going to be seeing a little bit more of Magneto, his
right.
great nemesis.
Yeah.
And
I mean, this,
to that.
This was the penultimate episode of season one. The next episode, episode 13, is called Final Decision, and that's the last episode. And the last things I want to talk about, it's like, it's really been amazing how in this first season, how all these episodes have pretty much been building up to something.
Yeah, like they work as one-offs, you know, if you're like
yeah.
a kid tuning in for the first time at episode 6 or 10 or whatever, it doesn't
right.
really matter.
Right,
like,
yeah, if an episode continues
it,
like Days of Future Past Part 2, they give you enough backstory that you know what's going on.
Yeah, but it's pretty, like, unique for a kid's cartoon
yeah.
show to have that much going on where, like, you kind of need that little snippet of, like, here's what happened last time.
And
it's
that,
like
and that's
kind
the
of a soap opera.
Yeah,
know?
And that's the Marvel style, that it's everything's connected, things build on each other, you know, the plot never ends kind of thing, and everything's a cliffhanger, and that's great, you know, it's like
yeah.
it really, as a kid I remember loving that you just dying to see what happens next, you couldn't miss it.
Right, because there's a lot of depth to the characters and the plot lines, and, you know, like, you're really in anticipation of what's gonna happen in this world.
Yeah, and then, you know, and just, you know, the next episode, for me, The Final Decision, that's what it's called, is one of the top three episodes ever in the show's history.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good, and I can't wait for us to get there next week. And I hope everyone will join us.
Yep, stay tuned.
Yeah, but before we go, just a reminder to subscribe to us on iTunes or wherever you listen to podcasts on your Android devices. Rate us 5 stars, leave us a nice review. You can follow me on Twitter, at Willie Simpson. Or join our Facebook group, the X-Men Task Podcast. We'll add you there, and you can talk to us directly. If you have any questions, we'll read them on the show, and we'll get your opinion. That's all I have for now. Do you have any last words for X-Fans?
Stay magnetized.
All right. Good night, everybody.
Good night.